This segment with Thich Nhat Hanh is Humankind Program number 55.
The executive producer is David Freudberg. This is Humankind.
KBOO Community Radio currently has a one-to-one match for all new and increasing members. A $100 new or increased donation will become $200 to support the important work of KBOO.
If you become a member at this time or increase your donation over last year, your donation will be matched one-to-one by a group of generous donors up to $10,000. Consider becoming a monthly sustaining member. This can be set up easily and securely online. Over 70% of KBOO's income is from you, our listeners, who take action to become KBOO members.
Go to kboo.fm/support to have your donation matched today, or mail your donation to KBOO at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon 97214. Thank you for supporting KBOO.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of WAMBA, Friday, January 1st, 2016 at 9 p.m. at the Analog Cafe in Portland. WAMBA is an African-inspired fusion band featuring improvisation with heavy African percussion breaks. The eight-piece band mixes traditional rhythms from Ghana and West Africa with Afrobeat, highlife, funk, and jazz styles. Again, that's WAMBA performing live Friday, January 1st at the Analog Cafe, 720 Southeast Hawthorne Boulevard in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Joseph Gallivan, and you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guests this week are Eugenia Pardue, a painter from Portland, Jeffrey Thomas, the director and owner of Jeffrey Thomas Fine Art, and Jane Beebe, of the owner of PDX Contemporary Art. Thanks for coming into KBOO.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Our subject this week is Art Basel Miami, which is the biggest art fair, or the most significant art fair in the USA. All three of my guests were there at the beginning of December in their different roles, and so they're just here to tell us why they went and what they got out of it. So, Jane, as a gallery owner, what did you do in Miami?
Well, I have a booth there at Pulse Miami, and I exhibit artists' work that I represent, and hoping to find new opportunities for those artists.
So people come up to you and they're like, oh, what's going on in Portland? Who have you got?
Yeah. Well, it's not necessarily about Portland. I did name the gallery PDX because I did, when I first opened, I thought I would do art fairs, and I wanted to place the gallery in Portland, but in people's minds. And but it's you have to apply to a fair, you get into the fair, and then you pay for a booth. You have a booth, and you decide, you have to, in applying, you say what artist you're going to show. Mm-hmm. And then you exhibit those artists. And then I always have a closet where it's salon style, and hang the other artists that are not featured in the gallery, so it gives as many of the artists that I work with opportunity as possible.
Mm-hmm. Jeffrey, you went representing Jeffrey Thomas Fine Art. What was your role?
Well, I didn't have a booth, so I was fairly free and easy. But I think everybody in Portland should recognize that the five galleries from Portland that were showing at one of the 20 different art fairs at that time did a marvelous job. They were all well composed, and people here should be very, very proud of the kind of work that's being put out there in the world. from Portland.
And did you go, did you hit the main fair and then the satellites?
Yes, I did. Because 17? I wasn't an exhibitor. I was able to move fairly fluidly. There was the main deal, which is Art Basel Miami Beach at the Convention Center, but there are 19 other fairs, of which Jane's participation in Pulse was definitely a top-notch fair. NADA, the New Art Dealers Alliance, where 1420 was showing, a wonderful fair for new young artists, Untitled, a curated fair, and so on and so forth. There are just many, many circles. There are many, many different art worlds. That's what you come away with this experience.
And Eugenia, you went as an artist, as a painter, and you have the added bonus of being from Miami originally, right?
Yes.
Been in Portland how long?
I've been here 17 and a half years.
So as a Miami person and as an artist, what did you hone in on?
Well, I go back, first and foremost, to look at the artwork and see what the new art breath that's being exposed internationally all comes to one city. So I have the opportunity to see new works being created, what's contemporary, what's being sold, what's showing, and get inspired and frustrated and excited, and all the emotions come up because I'm like, why am I not showing here? Mm-hmm. You know, I can see myself doing this. And I just like to say what, as Chuck Close once quipped, I think that an artist to go to an art fair is like a cow going on a guided tour of a slaughterhouse.
Hey, I was going to use that.
Well, and it's true. I mean, I go there and I want to be part of this, but I'm a participant as a viewer as opposed mm-hmm. to exhibiting there as an artist.
So it's kind of like a writer walking around Powell's and just getting really depressed because everyone else is everyone else is on the shelves.
Yes, something like that.
Well,
yeah.
And it's also it is a trade fair. I mean, this is what's so kind of perplexing is that the end of the day it's a convention center filled not with plumbing parts or widgets, but with very high-end works of art. Mm-hmm. So instead of, you know, a toilet next to a toilet, you've got a high-end Picasso next to another Picasso, and it goes on and on and on. Mm-hmm. And on. It's almost obscene.
How much of it, Jane, is schmoozing, just networking for you as a gallery owner?
Well, you hit my very weakness. I don't do as much as I should do that, but it is important, and it's important. I don't leave my booth. I stay in my booth, and I have a friend, Richard Levy from Albuquerque, has a wonderful gallery, and he goes out, he leaves his booth all the time, and he mm-hmm. goes around schmoozes, and I went, that's not exactly what he does, but and there are other people who do, but at night you go to parties, and I do visit other fairs when I can, if the times are different, so I visit as many fairs as I can to, you know, compare, compress, see. I have a lot of friends that are art dealers in other cities, so you see them, catch up with them, and meet with collectors, you have dinners. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of dinners. And that's expensive too, if you're the hostess.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it is. You got it. There's some people like, oh, please don't invite them. They'll order the most expensive bottle of wine on the menu.
Oh, thanks, Jane.
Can I go to dinner next time?
So you're standing in a booth or
yes.
sitting,
mm-hmm.
is that, are you hoping that passers-by will make some kind of connection?
Absolutely.
I would imagine.
I'm hoping to buy the work.
Right. Oh, okay.
No, so it is retail.
Yeah, no, totally. That's mm-hmm. I am there to sell work. But sometimes the best opportunities are not a sale, but some connection to a commission or with a curator in a museum. And so you don't know how a fair has gone for a good 6 months or so. And so
I think that's very important. These fairs are not over when they're over. That's really where they're beginning because,
right.
you know, you will generate hundreds of leads. And remember, as Eugenia said, I mean, the world has shifted. It used to be people came and visited your gallery every Saturday. You know, no more. You have to go there where everybody in the world will show up for an afternoon. And you just better be in your booth when they walk by, right, Jane?
Yeah, and Miami is truly international. I mean, you have collectors and curators come from all over the world, and they will not come visit my gallery in Portland.
Right, mm-hmm. right.
I mean, some do, but...
No, it's very important. Mm-hmm.
So, Eugenia, do you bring samples of your work or slide your laptop?
No way. They're there to sell. They're not there to look at artist's artwork. That's the worst thing an artist could possibly do.
Right.
That's true.
I think what an artist can do is see what's going on, where they might fit in a certain area. Mm-hmm. And take that information back and then maybe approach the gallery later. You know, say, I saw your work, introduce yourself. I like this artist. Maybe I might be a good fit. Mm-hmm. I don't have the self-confidence to do that yet with other galleries. But, you know, it takes a lot of confidence. Not only you're putting yourself there as an artist, but you also have to be marketing. I have to wear many hats as an artist. You know, I do the business part and contacts and the art making itself. So
right. No. Can you spot other artists in a crowd?
No. Hmm. No. Mm-mm.
Is that because everyone dresses in their convention gear and
there's just so many people there. I mean, can you spot an artist? I don't know, do I look like an artist? I mean,
yeah, they're the better dressed people. I mean, the guy in the shorts and the sandals is the billionaire who just flew in for the
something
afternoon.
Something like that.
It's amazing. Yeah, do not judge people by their flip flops.
No, not at all.
And what are some of the trends, Jane, that if you can see the way art is moving just from looking at this show?
Yeah, I think in many years ago in art fairs, it was easier to spot trends because there were trends more. Now the art world is so global and with the internet that there's a million different trends. But I would say that there is more interest in painting again. A few years ago, it was all photography. And photography is still, people are still interested in it, but different ways of working with photography. And there's a lot of ceramics right now, I noticed, at the art fairs. So something.
It's interesting to me to see how craft is turning into a fine art.
Yes, it is.
Fabrics,
totally.
Textiles, ceramics, even use of materials.
What do you mean?
Like, for instance, I came across an artist represented by C. Emerson Fine Arts in St. Petersburg, Florida, and his name's Rogan Brown, and he uses cut paper sculptures that captures the intricacy of natural architecture, and he uses laser and hand-cut papers arranged in layers to evoke the patterns of microbes, moss, cells, and more. So I'm seeing the use of materials in a very different fashion, like paper cut, or as Jane showed, Jeffrey Mitchell, ceramics, great work. You know, and it's going up the echelon of the hierarchy of what fine art is.
Is this paper cut guy, any like the guys at Blue Sky Gallery right now? Have you seen that?
No, I have not.
These are photos of little paper sculptures, but they're like scenes of camping, like in Washington. Very intricate, but then he photographs them with interesting lighting. And
no, these are actually in a shadow box about 6 inches deep, and they're just really intricate, beautiful cut paper, white on white, and I sculpt white on white paintings, so I really resonated with that, and it gives me ideas.
What fair was he at?
He was at Aqua. I like Aqua because it's a hotel that's converted, and it's a little bit more intimate and less intimidating. It's outside. It's set up like the Jupiter Hotel, the outside old style Miami Beach hotel, and you can just wander in the rooms and check out the artwork. It's more intimate in a way. You get to, whereas you go into these huge like Pulse or Nada or whatever, I feel a little bit intimidated by the size of the space and how many galleries are being shown.
Are you saying that craft is taken a bit more seriously now in big fairs like this?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, that's true.
And I wonder why that is.
I think that whole boundary's broken down.
Yeah, I think everything's
Maybe not in England so much, but it's in Portland, I think there's been much less strict division between, quote, fine art and craft. There's been much more acceptance that, you know, you could do ceramics and be fine artists. It wasn't in England, my understanding was that if you showed craft work, what they consider craft work, you would never be taken seriously as a fine art. And I don't think that's existed in Portland.
So Jeffrey, some of your shows have been, your group shows have been like that, right?
Well, I don't,
mix it up.
I don't look at the gender or the age or the material. I mean, really, you're looking for a strong image and an authentic concept. You want those two things, and you want consistency across that. And that's what I look for. I don't care what it's made out of. And let's face it, a lot of people are going to Home Depot and buying $9 worth of stuff and just screwing it together and supporting their artist statement. So, I mean, there's a lot of different approaches. Let's put it that way. But it should be taken seriously. I mean, clay figures go back 10,000 years. I mean, this is the history of humanity we're talking about. Who cares what it's made out of?
Mm-hmm. And Jeffrey, when you were in Miami, what kind of things were jumping out at you?
Well, I mean, it's a wonderful experience for me because it's part junket, part work. I get to see my fellow Portland dealers.
I saw you everywhere, Jeffrey.
I'm here. I'm there. It is kind of crazy. It's an enormous saturation, and I don't think anybody can go more than 4 hours at a time without putting up their feet just to rest them. But I see each of the fairs has a very different feeling. And remember, the fairs are only part of the deal. As Jane said, it's the dinners in the evening and the activities and the schmoozing, but it's also seeing some of the private collections that are extraordinary. This whole phenomenon of the private museum, of the collector who doesn't want to donate to a museum but would rather have control by starting their own museum for much the same benefit. Tax-wise.
You go to someone's house in Miami?
Well, you have these special purpose-built
spaces
that are extraordinary.
Are they bringing it all with them?
No,
they're in warehouses or like in buildings in the design district area.
Oh, okay.
And they open
the
up
private
the doors.
Museums, yeah.
There are probably six
open
of them
the in,
that are open to the public. Well, they should be open to the public. That's what the Senate's looking into. But the fact is that, these are extraordinary collections in the morning.
Really
and then
good.
But Art Basel Miami Beach at the Convention Center is miles of aisles. Mm-hmm. And then you go, as Eugenia said, you go to a curated smaller fair like Aqua, which is in a hotel. That's a whole different feeling. I don't respond well to that. Untitled was a beautiful beach tent with a luminous ceiling. Pulse was also on the beach where Jane showed. Wonderful work. Again, many, many, many different levels of accessibility. I will say, coming back to Portland, and to all you Portland listeners out there, get out there and buy a piece of art locally, because you cannot do better price-wise or quality or integrity than here in Portland. Just, it is amazing the disparity in pricing and value in this country, in this world now.
My name is Joseph Gallivan. You're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guests this week are Eugenia Pardue, a painter, Jeffrey Thomas of Jeffrey Thomas Fine Arts, Jane Beebe of PDX Contemporary Art. And they're talking about Art Basel Miami, which happened a few weeks ago. They were all there in Miami, and it's the biggest or most significant art trade show in the U.S. So the New York Times report led with the weather, and it, pretty much 50% of the article was about women in fancy shoes having to walk through puddles. So let's talk about the weather. It rained. Did anyone lose out by the fact that you could move around Miami?
Not for me. No. I just got some plastic bags from Walgreens and strapped them on my feet and went on my way.
No, it made viewing the work much easier. You didn't feel like the pull of the ocean or the lure of a tan hanging out by the pool. None of that.
I know. I got the whole ocean to myself. I go swimming in the morning before the fair, and I had the whole ocean to myself.
Yeah. Well, it did say in the piece, it kept people in looking at the art as opposed to strolling. And
but the traffic's appalling. I mean, just moving around Miami is difficult. But
attendance to the fairs was good, I thought, to all the fairs. And I think in general, the with the economy a few years ago, there were maybe fewer attendees in general. And this year and last year, too, it seemed like there were a lot of people in Miami this year, which is good.
I can't remember what the numbers are, 70,000, 80,000. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a lot of art.
It's pretty big. I mean, Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas, which is all about gadgets and things, is 150,000 people. So to get half that many looking at art is pretty extraordinary.
Yeah, if we get the other 70,000 out of that show over the art fair, the art world will really take off.
A cab driver said one of the best things to me. She said, any artist that sells anything at this fair should be complimented or feel good, because the competition, you think of, you know, you have each fair has between, you know, 60 and 300 galleries, mm-hmm. and each gallery has multiple artists. And even if there's, you know, between 30 and 60, however many thousand viewers, you do the math, and actually selling something, the competition is fierce. Mm-hmm. So you feel really good when you sell.
So Eugenia, have you noticed that the people's willingness to collect, did it go up and down with the Great Recession from 2008 to now? Is art considered a luxury? Do you feel people are like skimping on art for a while?
That's a really good question, and I can't answer that. Mm. I think Jane or Jeffrey could answer that better.
Mm. Well, in your own, selling your own art?
Selling my own art? It's, my work is unique in the sense that it reaches many different paradigms of thinking about what painting is. Mm-hmm. So it can reach the Luddite or the art sophisticate, depending on how you want to, what you want to bring to the table and how you want to view my work. Mm-hmm. So that being said, yes, I've had museum shows and I've had a couple gallery shows. I've get commissioned pieces from Tiffany's and company, or I work with hospitality people that place my work in the Ritz-Carlton, high-end homes. Mm-hmm. My work is very sophisticated, mm-hmm. And elegant. And so, it reaches a really broad audience. Mm-hmm. So I'm in transition right now with my work, seeing where it's going. I'm taking on a different language. So it's a process.
So, and you've showed at Jeffrey's gallery, right?
No, I gave... Eugenia actually took me to an art fair a couple of years ago. So my re-entry into this whole thing after 20 years.
Last year.
Got me going.
What was that called?
Oh, that was in New York. It's called Select. And it was not what we would consider a top-tier work, although Eugenia's work stood out. But since I came back, you know, I have such respect for, of course, Janie and I worked together years ago with William Jameson, and all the gallerists here in this town are so approachable and so kind and have really good programs. You know, we're really talking about what we call primary work, work that's new and fresh and new to the market and accessible to people. I want to be very clear about one thing. Buying a work of art is the only thing I can imagine that puts you on parity with the billionaire, because there's only one of Eugenia's pieces like that. And if you pony up $100 a month, which you can do at most of the galleries locally, you can own that piece, and some dirtbag like Trump comes along and begs for it. You say, no, man, you can't have it. You've got everything else. You cannot have this piece of art. Mm-hmm. And that is why I really, and I think anybody in this room would agree, the people who really pony up over time, who really love works of art, realize that they shouldn't be put off because it's discretionary income. That's nonsense. It's not like buying an Audi, or anybody can do that. Anybody mm-hmm. can buy a BMW. To buy a work of art, it takes confidence, and it takes patronage, and it takes intelligence, curiosity. Well, that's why I do it.
What's the effect of these, you know, you see these multi-million dollar paintings on display at these big fairs. Like, is that just a kind of a novelty? Because it seems to be irrelevant to what everyone else is there for. I mean, there's only one or two people are going to buy these crazy...
It only takes one or two.
there's an amazing number of people out there buying. It's not just one or two. There's a lot of people doing that.
So somebody would, they who wants are to buying, spend $10 million, would just go to a fair?
They're very...
Isn't that all done in back rooms?
No, it's there's a lot of complex... preparation and dealings, and it's not just a simple, oh, I'll walk into the booth buy that. No, there's been a lot of preparation from the dealer, and also courting the buyer sometimes has to court the gallery to be able to buy a piece.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's very complex.
Let's be very clear on that. That we call the secondary market, work of blue chip works of art. Mm-hmm. We're talking about high net worth individuals purchasing works of art. You know, they're getting 20-25% back on their money. I mean, that's what you can get
What does that mean?
Well, that means you buy a Warhol last year and you can turn around and sell it in 2 years for millions more than you paid.
Maybe.
Maybe.
Because it depends on the Warhol. Yeah.
Right. You have to really know your stuff. But that's not the world that most of us are in. I mean, that's an asset play. And that's a different deal.
It is different.
But that's there in Miami at the same time you're
that's
over.
That's what's so fabulous. You have some young students showing in one fair, and then you have, you know, Frank Stella's and Motherwell's and Basquiat's and all the usual suspects, Stengel's and Christopher Wolf's, all those guys everywhere.
Mm-hmm. We were showing Joe Rutko's. He's just right out of the gate. And tremendous interest in his work.
What
and
is he?
He does photography, but he also works with combining photography and drawing. And I think we sold 10 of his works, but the price were from $650 to $900 to $1,200, and that's really, really inexpensive for an art fair. But still, he is now in collections that he never would be in otherwise, and then we'll start, you know, raising his prices as we go. But it's, you know, I think one of the reasons why it's good to, it's hard as a gallerist to show work that's that low in price because that wall costs so much.
Oh, right.
And but if you're looking at the long run, in the long run with the artist like he is, seems so dedicated, it will probably pay off. But that's an investment. These art fairs are often a very expensive investment in the future of a particular artist. Mm-hmm. They're Johannes Girardone, he has a higher price. And I mean, this sounds crass, but his artwork sales pays for the wall on which it's, because the art fairs don't make money for galleries. It makes money for the artists because the galleries pay all of the expenses.
Mm-hmm. How much was your booth?
Gosh, I don't know. By the time I got finished, the booth itself was probably, with all the lights and other things.
You have to pay per light. Per an extra wall build out.
Yeah,
closet.
If you want an extra $90, the outlet was $120.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. That just adds up.
Yeah, no, and then the shipping.
But you might end up spending five figures on your booth.
Yeah, we spend. Yeah, no, I probably spent $50,000. Yeah.
50?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Maybe you got to be, that's a, for a week, you know. It's
yeah,
and that's the main, the big show.
Maybe
I mean,
more.
You can go up to $300,000 for a weekend.
Yeah.
So it's crazy. Crazy
Eugenia,
money.
You said you went around and you had a lot of strong feelings about your position as an artist. What's the takeaway? Did you come back inspired and want to actually do painting?
Oh, yeah. I always come back inspired, you know, and motivated. And I think it's really important. The Northwest is in the Northwest. It's so far removed from any major cultural center. I think LA would probably be the closest. I think it's really important for artists and art people to go to Basel, even if they have to just scrape to get by, because the plethora of information that you can get in 1 week of just seeing very high-end contemporary artwork and meeting people is so important. I mean, I come back with a rich experience every time I go.
Mm-hmm. And do you get to see your family?
I don't have family there anymore.
Oh, okay.
I get to see my friends. I went to Key West for a few days. That was fun. I got to see my girlfriend from college. She lives down there now with her family. But I just wanted to say also really quickly, one of my favorite art fairs is Untitled because it's curated through a curatorial sensibility as opposed to a gallery making of the selection committee. And I was really happy to see Up for a gallery that's owned by Theo Downs Le Guin, and his work is really refreshing. And how long has he been around in Portland?
Couple years.
Yeah.
So it was. I got to connect with him in Miami Beach and sit down and talk with him more so than I did here. So that was really great.
No, and Elizabeth Leach had a fabulous booth. Elizabeth and Daniel did a first rate job. Of course, Jane's a pro. You know.
Well, and Amy Adams. Adams Ullman was at
Adams Ullman.
Yeah, she
along with Janine. Yeah.
Yeah, terrific.
Not as an interesting experience. It's held in a hotel reception room, so it's very small, very crowded, and it creates a frenzy feeling, which is a very different. I don't do well in those claustrophobic environments.
It looked good this year.
We have like 1 minute left. Is hypnosis still valuable in the art world? If you hear a buzz about a cool party or something, does everyone wish they were there? Was it like, no?
Yes. Absolutely.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Bated breath all the way.
What you want is the invitation. You don't necessarily want to go. In fact, by the end of the day, you usually don't want to go. But yes, it's there are VIPs within VIPs. I mean, even the VIP lounge at Art Basel Miami Beach had VIP lounges within the VIP lounge. So if you just can't.
It's very striated.
You just enjoy it. Enjoy where you're at.
It's just your niche.
Yeah, find your niche. But again, I just a shout out to all the Portland galleries doing a really good job holding their own in the world.
Yeah, absolutely.
My name's Joseph Gallivan. You've been listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guests this week were Eugenia Pardew, a painter, Jeffrey Thomas of Jeffrey Thomas Fine Art, and Jane Beebe of PDX Contemporary Art. Thank you so much for coming into KBOO.
It's been a pleasure.
Happy holidays.
Thank you.
Yeah, bye. Merry Christmas.
Buy art, everyone. Buy art.
Are you still looking for a way to fit KBOO into your year-end giving? KBOO Community Radio is in this year's Willamette Week Give Guide. For the past 11 years, the Give Guide has raised nearly $13 million for hundreds of local nonprofits. Help us reach our $20,000 goal and look KBOO up on the giveguide.org website and make a donation today before December 31st. Remember, we have a one-to-one match for all new and increasing donations, too. Thank you for supporting KBOO.
Daddy, las mamas están aquí.